From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. So glad to have you on board with us today. I am Jody Heiss, your August host. As we get going through this month, I'm a senior fellow here at FRC, and so glad to have you with us. All right, we've got a lot to bring your way today. We're going to begin in just a moment by having Representative Jim Baird. He will be with us to discuss the latest as to what's happening in Israel, and there is a lot taking place there, not the least of which the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is there visiting Samaria and Judea. So we've got a lot to cover with Congressman Baird here in just a few moments. And then a little bit later in the program, we're going to be looking at Texas again. It's unbelievable what's happening there. A host of Democrats have fled the state. The legislators, Democratic legislators, have fled the state as the legislators there are trying to make some redistricting decisions. Well, the governor's response is to issue a warrant for their arrest. So we'll be speaking with Representative David Spiller, state representative of Texas, as to the latest of what's going on there as the program unfolds. And then we've got some good news as it relates to marriage. Divorce rates are down. In fact, down at 50-year lows. How amazing is that, and what is the cause behind of all of that? Well, Carter Skill will be joining me. He's the executive director at the Institute for Family Studies. And we'll try to break down some of those great news. And then we're going to shift gears and look over to California. One of the most dangerous bills as it relates to parental rights ever in the history of our nation appears to be unfolding there. And we want to bring you the latest. Gina Gleason with Real Impact will bring us the latest there. And friends, I tell you, this is something that will make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, so you want to be aware of what's happening there. And then we will conclude the program today with Joel Richardson. He's a biblical researcher and teacher and a best-selling author, and we're going to be talking with him about how Christians should be responding to the anti-Semitism that's taking place across the country and literally around the world. So we've got a lot to bring your way today, a lot to cover. You don't want to miss any of it. But if by chance you do, as always, our website is tonyperkins.com. You want to be sure to keep that website handy, as not only this, but many other programs, as well as a wealth of information is available there for you. All right, let's jump into our first topic. Yesterday, House Speaker Mike Johnson arrived in the region of Judea and Samaria as part of an official visit that he's making. And what makes it so special is the first time that a sitting U.S. Speaker of the House has visited that area, the area that many people have been referring to as the West Bank. And so after a week of the legacy media trying to suggest that there's a growing wedge between the United States and Israel, here we have just the opposite seems to be taking place. Well, here to discuss this and more with me is Congressman Jim Baird, who serves on three House committees, including the Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 4th Congressional District of the great state of Indiana. Congressman Baird, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to see you, my friend.
Thanks. Good to see you as well. How you doing, Jody?
I am doing great. Thank you. All right, listen, let's first of all, is it clear that the U.S., and I'm going to put it this way, and maybe this isn't the best way to phrase this, but the relationship between the U.S. and Israel, is it better than ever, or do you think there's some tension between the countries? What is this right now from your perspective?
From my perspective, it's better than it's ever been. I think the fact that Hamas attacked Israel really strengthened that relationship from my perspective. And it's important to recognize that I feel, and I think a lot of others the same way, that Israel had a right to defend itself and has a right to continue to clean up what Hamas did to them on October the 7th.
Yeah, you know, I pose that question, Congressman, because here we have more anti-Semitism perhaps than we've that I can remember, probably in my lifetime at least. And And yeah, you've got, it seems to be a faction in the country, but at the same time, there seems to be great relationship between the Israeli prime minister and the White House. And right now the Speaker of the House is visiting there. So I would tend to agree with you, at least from the perspective politically, from the party that's in charge right now here in the United States, but there is some shaky ground at the same time. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I think you have to really analyze what is taking place. And I am very comfortable with the President Trump, and I'm very comfortable with the Speaker Mike Johnson. I think both of those really care about other people and even other societies. And so they're going to work to try to bring peace. And yet there are those that are making it difficult to accomplish that. And yet they're advocating for other means of government that, and I'm talking about communism, that we know doesn't work. And so I'm very comfortable and appreciate all the things that the president has done and the Speaker of the House has done. And I've been to Israel a time or two, and I really enjoy and have been excited to see what Prime Minister Netanyahu has done.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the Speaker of the House. I was not aware until seeing this today that as the Speaker is there right now in Judea and Samaria, some call the West Bank, it's the first time that a sitting Speaker of their House has done so. But speaking of that, there's a seems to be a growing reference to that particular region being called for what it is historically, Judea and Samaria, rather than the West Bank. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's probably a valid perspective. And then it removes the West Bank concept, and maybe that's a good thing under the current circumstances, because it gets away from what's been happening by using the West Bank name.
Absolutely. There's been some outrage this week, and I'm sure you, like many of us, have seen some of the images that have been released of the way that Hamas has been not caring for some of the hostages, just emaciated captives. It's just horrible. What do you think of Hamas and the reactions to all of this as these images continue to come forth?
Well, you know, I think their actions are barbaric, and that's one of the reasons I think Israel has a right to clean it up. And you know, when people will attack young people at a music festival and start killing those people that are innocent, and then starving to death, they took 251 hostages, and they think there may be somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 of those still alive, and they think there's 50 hostages with the other 30 that passed away. But President Trump wants to bring everyone home, including those that passed away. But I think the treatment of the hostages illustrates what Hamas is capable of, as well as the attack on October the 7th. And when you got people like that are promoting the instability in that region, and the instability and the way they've treated other people is just horrific. And so
it really is
just amazing.
So it is. And, you know, it appears to me, and there's some reports out there that Hamas is under pressure right now. Does it appear to you, from what you're seeing, what you're hearing, and talking in conversation with your colleagues and others, that perhaps new talks, negotiations could be happening soon? Do you think that's a possibility?
I do think that's a possibility. And, you know, some of the scenes that have just recently been released on the news really shows that Rafah is just destroyed or demolished. And so I've been to that border, and I've seen the trucks sitting there waiting to go in. And then when they do get in, sometimes those Hamas takes the food, and food is fungible because it's just like money. And if you've got it, it's illustrated by those people trying to get enough food, and you see the activity that takes place when they meet these distribution centers. And you know, while we're talking about that, this group, the Gaza Humanitarian Effort, that's run by a lot of former special forces individuals from the United States, and they've been able to give out 1 million meals a day, and they've been able to keep control of that situation, and they got 4 distribution points. But back to your issue about if you think there's a possibility, I think Hamas is being under a lot of pressure, and I think Israel has been doing that, and the fact that Israel is considering moving forward, at least they're having, you know, Netanyahu's having his cabinet get together sometime this week to decide what the next steps are. And I think they're concerned about what those might be.
If I can switch gears for you real quickly, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but yesterday Attorney General Pam Bondi directed the Department of Justice officials to open a grand jury investigation into how the Obama administration officials handled intelligence about the Russian interference in the 2016 elections. What's your take on what's been unfolding there? It seems like that is just taking a lot of attention from the news.
Well, I really think, I'm really glad that Attorney General Bondi is going to do that. I'm glad that the Director Cash Patel and the DNI, Tulsi Gabbard, are all going to take a look at and get to the bottom of this. And I think the American people deserve that. And they need justice because this has been going on for years, and it's all been against President Trump. And I don't think that's fair. I think we need answers. And I think this investigation and subpoenas will help get to the bottom of this.
The subpoenas that came out today, I saw from James Comer and the Oversight Committee released a list of people that they are going to subpoena, from Hillary and Bill Clinton all the way down to a host of others. I mean, we'll see what will happen there. Probably some of them will just simply plead the fifth and carry on. But this is an issue that we need to get to the bottom of. Potentially, some are saying, potentially one of, if not the greatest scandal in the U.S. history. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. And you know, how do you ever build trust in our government under these kind of circumstances when it's been advocated for years now, this Steele dossier and Russian hoax, and yet now we're finding out that it wasn't true and that it was a hoax. So how is the American people going to ever develop trust in our government if we don't get to the bottom of it and find out what we need to do to correct it?
Good question. Thank you so much, Congressman Jim Baird. Indiana, always great to see you. Thank you for taking time to join us today on Washington Watch. We appreciate it.
You too.
All right, friends, coming up, we've got a lot more to cover. Democrat lawmakers in Texas have fled the state for the sole purpose of blocking a vote that the legislators are trying to deal with in redrawing congressional districts. And now arrest warrants have been issued for them. What in the world is going on? Well, we'll discuss it right after the break, so stay tuned.
The family is the oldest, most tested, and most reliable unit of society. It is divinely created and sustained. And yet, there are those who are always tampering with its values and structure. That's why we need organizations like the Family Research Council that can effectively defend and strengthen the family.
Family Research Council began over 40 years ago, like all great movements of God, with prayer. Today, rooted in the heart of the nation's capital, FRC continues to champion faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview.
FRC is one of those bright lights that helps us focus on true north. And I shudder to think, had they not been here, that it could have been worse.
The Family Research Council is key. It's one of a handful of groups that I think will determine whether our children live in a country that enjoyed all of the freedom and all the opportunity that we enjoyed in this great land.
It's just a wonderful parachurch organization that doesn't seek to take the place of the church, but it seeks to assist the family and the church as we try to move forward successfully, not in a defensive mode, but in an offensive mode as we seek to live our lives according to the Holy Scriptures.
FRC is not going to be whooped. we're going to fight. We're going to take a stand. And again, we don't retreat.
You will never see in front of this building here in Washington, D.C., a white flag fly. We will never step back. We will never surrender. And we will never be silent.
In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory. Family Research Council invites you to join our Stand on the Word Bible reading plan as we reflect upon the life of Jesus, the Word who dwelt among us. Come with us and discover the glory of the Word. Read the Gospels and witness the life-changing story of Jesus, his life, death, and resurrection. Come read how Jesus transformed the lives of common people and how those same people transform the known world through the power of the Holy Spirit. Come with us for 10 to 15 minutes a day and read the entire New Testament before the new year. Find our Bible reading plan and daily devotionals from Tony Perkins at frc.org/Bible. Join us and stand on the Word.
Thank you for tuning in today to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, an honor to be filling in for Tony this month, and deeply honored to have you on board with us as well. All right, this next story is incredible. The Texas House of Representatives convened today, I'll put that, but they had to adjourn for a second day in a row because the state House Democrats are AWOL. Well, yesterday, arrest warrants were issued for dozens of them. These are lawmakers who have fled Texas, and as you probably are seeing on the news, they've gone to various blue states. It's all in an effort to try to block the state legislature from voting on legislation to redraw congressional districts there. So, I mean, what do you make of this? Lawlessness, more lawlessness from the left. And frankly, a pushback on the will of the people. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Texas State Representative David Spiller. He's from the 68th District of the great state of Texas. Representative Spiller, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody. I appreciate you having me.
Well, it is an honor to have you. And boy, all of us have tons of questions and intrigue over what's happening. Let's begin. Why don't you just give us a little background on what's been happening there over the last few days?
Well, we got called in Texas. We meet for 140 days once every 2 years. We did that, we completed that, but then the governor can call us anytime back into special session anytime he wants to, and he puts certain things on the call, and that special session can last up to 30 days. Well, one of the things on the call, there were 18 matters on the call, but on down the list was congressional redistricting. And it needed to be addressed because of some legal reasons under a Fifth Circuit case and so forth that came up last year. But in any event, we addressed those. And we also, first and foremost, have a special committee appointed to address the flooding and the flooding victims and disaster relief and preparedness relative to Kerrville, Kerr County, and the Hill Country. And so, and everyone's aware of the devastation that occurred there. So which first and foremost is what we're trying to do, but we're also trying to deal with this redistricting. I'm on the Select Committee on Congressional Redistricting. I've attended all the hearings, but when it comes time to vote and those matters come to the House floor, well, many of my Democrat colleagues decide to flee the state and run off and hide to blue states. And blue states, incidentally, that have already redistricted in a very compelling way. but they want to claim that we're racist and inconsiderate and how this is wrong and illegal and unconstitutional. So here we are trying to do business, but we have to have a quorum, which out of 150 members of the Texas House is 100. So there are 88 Republicans. We had 88 Republicans show up today, and eight, with all due respect, there were eight Democrats that showed up, but we were at 96 folks altogether. We were short of a quorum, and so hopefully we can get one soon.
So is what your Democratic colleagues doing part of the process there? I mean, is this legitimate, or is this a violation of the law or the rules of the House, or what is this a legitimate thing they're doing?
Jody, great question. It is neither. It is both. It is both a violation of civil of our rules. It's a violation of the law. Governor Abbott has even raised the issue that it may be considered a criminal offense of bribery to the extent that these folks have accepted benefit in return for their non-vote and non-participation. So, but when I took an oath to be a state representative, I still remember what I swore under oath to do, and that was to faithfully execute the duties of the office of state representative and to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States and this state, so help me God. These folks have completely ignored their oath of office and have fled the state. It is not permitted under the House rules to do so. When they say, well, this is a procedure, this is a rule, I've read the rules in the House rules. It ain't in there. So it's a blatant violation, and it's a slap in the face to not only all Texans, but especially to those folks that we're trying to do important work in the state of Texas for, including the flood victims of Kerr County.
So this is an illegal act. Your bottom line, I suppose, the governor is in full, the rights, I guess, as the governor to issue arrest warrants. Is that correct?
Interesting, yes. And I applaud Governor Abbott. He's done a great job. Our House Speaker, Speaker Burroughs, has done a fantastic job. These people are working with Texas Department of Public Safety to try to round up those and execute these civil arrest warrants. We've got two processes going on. I'm an attorney, so let me kind of get into some legal stuff here. But you've got two processes going on. One is a civil warrant where they can actually, if they find them within the state of Texas, they can handcuff them, bring them to the House floor, and literally lock them in the building. That process is being done, and some of those folks, we believe, are in the state of Texas and can be found and can be brought to our House. Interestingly, when you talk about a charge of bribery, to the extent that if a charge is actually filed, that's a criminal offense. And I believe the last time I checked, we could extradite from Illinois or New York if there was a felony arrest warrant issued. So interesting where we're gonna go with this, but I'm gonna tell you this. I went through this when I was in the legislature in 2021. They pulled this same stunt. We eventually got everything done that we needed to get done, but I'm tired of it. I'm missing a vacation with my wife, my kids, and my grandkids on a Disney cruise, so I'm not very happy. I'm down here working, doing the work of the folks of the state of Texas, and I don't appreciate these folks sticking a finger in mine.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to watch how this unfolds. I know you've seen Governor Gavin Newsom from California and Kathy Hochul of New York. They're all indicating now that they may take up mid-decade redistricting in their state. But as you referenced a while ago, they've already done this. I mean, they've done this kind of thing years ago, and there's not a whole lot of room for them to do much more gerrymandering. We've only got 30 seconds or so, but you want to respond to that?
Yeah, the pickings off those bones would be pretty slim, I would tell you, because you can't imagine. When you look at what the top five Democrat states in the country have done and how they've done this and the advantage that they've created for themselves is outrageous. And the very idea that these people go run to those states, California, New York, Illinois, New Jersey, Maryland, all of those states, and you look at what they've done right, and the advantage that they've created for themselves and how disingenuous it is.
Absolutely. Thank you, Texas State Representative David Spiller from the 68th District. I appreciate you joining us, and sorry you're missing your vacation.
That's all right. Thank you, Jody. Appreciate it.
All right, friends, you bet. Coming up next, we got some great news on the marriage front. Divorce rates have been falling at a 50-year low. Stay tuned. We'll bring you all the details right after this.
Download the new Stand Firm app for Apple and Android phones today. You can join a wonderful community of fellow believers. We've created a special place for you to access news from a biblical perspective. Read and listen to daily devotionals, pray for current events, and more. Share the Stand Firm app with your friends, family, and church members. And of course, stand firm wherever you go.
At Family Research Council, defending the family isn't just a mission, it's our daily calling. Every team member at FRC uses their God-given talents to stand for biblical truth, protect life, and uphold religious freedom.
Here at Family Research Council, we face many threats to the family, threats that have been with us for some time. Abortion, the gender ideology threat, the attacks on marriage, the attacks on parental authority, and the attacks on religious freedom. We have to promote, support, strengthen, and incentivize family growth so families take their place in society in a place of honor.
I'm defending the family by working in the Center for Biblical Worldview to provide cutting-edge research and resources for pastors, ministry leaders, and Christian parents.
Through my work at the Washington Stand, I passionately defend what God has defined for marriage and family. I don't see the Washington Stand as just a place to talk about cultural events. It's a place to share biblical truth. It's a perfect outlet to advance and defend what God has defined as good, true, and beautiful.
Because of you, we're able to frame things in such a way that help Christians stand for truth on the things that matter most, like life, faith, family, and freedom.
Thank you for standing with us.
Thank you for your support. It is so critical to the work that we at Family Research Council are doing day to day as we support and strengthen the family. So thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss. Glad to have you joining us today. All right, you probably have heard, like most of us have, the saying that half of all marriages end with divorce. Well, it turns out that may be some outdated information based on an analysis of marriage trends in recent years. In fact, in recent decades, the divorce rate has actually been falling, and now it's at a 50-year low. Amazing. So what can we draw from all of this? Well, I'm glad to have my next guest with me, Carter Skeel. He's the executive director at the Institute for Family Studies, which released this new research last week. Carter, welcome to Washington Watch. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Jody. It's great to be here. And thanks for showcasing this exciting and groundbreaking new research for those of us who care deeply about marriage and family. So yes, you're right. The idea that divorce is, or sorry, that marriage is essentially a coin toss, right? That your odds of being able to stay in a stable and secure marriage are about 50-50 is no longer correct. It's actually closer to 40%, which is of course still higher than we'd like it to be, but is in a much better position for those who are thinking about or entering into their first marriages.
Can you tell this, and I don't know if your study dealt with this at all, but the 50-50 thing for years always was a big question mark to me, because oftentimes we're even told that the church is no different from the world, that just as much divorce rate within the church as outside. I can tell you, as a pastor for almost 30 years, that was not the situation in any of the churches I pastored. Our families, we did have some divorce. I mean, don't get me wrong. But for the most part, those families that had a relationship with the Lord stuck together. It was rare, let me put it that way, in our churches to see divorce. Is that a real accurate picture within the church?
Sure. So that was that particular analysis is beyond the scope of this survey, which is drawn mostly from analysis of national data. But we are looking to study precisely that perceived phenomenon that as religious adherence grows, the likelihood of divorce goes down. So I do think anecdotally that's true. We're looking to back that up with some research and a forthcoming study.
Well, I look forward to you coming up with that. But what you've got already is just absolutely fascinating. So the picture that you're seeing now, the trends that you're seeing now, how does this compare to past decades?
Right. So specific to divorce rates, as we've discussed, it's down from 50% to 40%. We're also seeing positive trends in non-marital childbearing, which peaked at 41% in 2009 and now has leveled off. It's still at 44%. So a modest positive trend there. But if you also look at the share of children that are raised in married parent families, that bottomed out at 64% in 2012 and has since risen to 66%. So I think it's easy to look at those and say, okay, it's a couple percentage points, but it's also always useful to contextualize this and think of the thousands of families and tens of thousands of, in a lot of these cases, kids that are now raised in married parent families with a mother and father that love them and are biologically bonded to them. So we're obviously cautiously optimistic about these trend lines, but even to see trend lines like these level off and in some cases modestly reverse is huge news and really the impetus for publishing the Why Marriage Survives account in The Atlantic last week.
So what's driving all of this, Carter? That's because whatever it is, we need to keep doing it. So what's behind all of this?
Right, of course, yeah. So there is a selection effect here. So the idea that marriage is becoming more selective, with the three big drivers being religious adherence, as we talked about, affluence. So as you go up the socioeconomic scale, the rate of marriage increases, and then education. So more educated people, are more likely to be married. So I think that's one story that should be told. I also think the idea of the quote unquote family revolution that drove a lot of the negative trend lines starting in the late 60s, 70s, and 80s is seeming to peter out. I mean, there's still on both especially the online right, but especially on the left, there's still criticism about the traditional family and even the idea of having kind of a normative family structure at all. But at the same time, I think there's an element of not practicing what is being, not practicing what is being preached there, especially among the elite who themselves are getting married and staying married and having kids, but then preach a very different gospel to the broader culture.
That's amazing. I was really encouraged with all of this, too, that it appears the marriage comeback is strongest with Black families, which is encouraging to see as well. So based on your research, we've just got about a minute. What advice would you give to churches to keep these trends going?
Right. I mean, there are positive network effects here of if you are in a community with high marriage rates, you're more likely to get married. Unfortunately, it's also there's some correlation with divorce rates. So if you have a friend that that gets divorced, you are then more likely to get divorced. So I really think, and this is part of our work at the Institute for Family Studies, disseminating this research as if nothing else, an encouragement to young people or to parents or to these right. church congregations and communities that you can get married, that it's not a bad bet. For young men and women to make.
Absolutely. Carter Skill, Executive Director of the Institute for Family Studies. Awesome news. Thank you for bringing this information to light. Great, great news. Thanks for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, marriage is doing better, but boy, parental rights is suffering in California. Stay tuned. We'll bring that story your way right after the break.
Family Research Council is committed to advancing faith, family, and freedom from the East Coast to the West. So FRC is going to Southern California for this year's Pray, Vote, Stand Summit, October 17th and 18th at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. Join us for this powerful gathering of Christians desiring cultural renewal and spiritual revival. The Pray, Vote, Stand Summit brings together Christian leaders, issue experts, and government officials for a time of prayer, inspiration, and action. Together, we will seek God's guidance for our nation and engage in meaningful discussions on the intersection of faith, government, and culture. If the spiritual foundations and the cultural walls of our nation are to be rebuilt, we all have a role to play. May we each find our place on the wall as we build for biblical truth. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
Jennifer, it's so exciting to be here with you today talking about our new book, Embracing God's Design. Who is actually going to benefit from reading this book in your view?
There are so many different audiences that can benefit. The first one are counselors themselves, right? Because we have some material in there where we really address the gender dysphoria diagnosis and what is wrong with it. We have information for people who are wanting to go back to embracing God's design for their life.
This is really magical to have the therapist and the individual who suffered come together and write about why this is happening and why we're seeing this.
And we brought all of that experience to the table. We want to see people walking in the fullness of who God has called them to be and not a false identity.
Order today at EmbraceTheDesign.com.
How should Christians think about the thorny issues shaping our culture? How should Christians address deceitful ideas like transgenderism, critical theory, or assisted suicide? How can Christians navigate raising children in a broken culture, the war on gender roles, or rebuilding our once great nation? Outstanding is a podcast from the Washington Stand dedicated to these critical conversations. Outstanding seeks to tear down what our corrupt culture lifts up, with an aim to take every thought and every idea captive to the obedience of Christ. Whether policies or partisan politics, whether conflict in America or conflict abroad, join us and our guests as we examine the headlines through the lens of Scripture and explore how Christians can faithfully exalt Christ in all of life. Follow Outstanding on your favorite podcast app and look for new episodes each week.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, filling in for Tony. Thank you so much for joining us today. Well, you have probably heard the statement somewhere along the way that whatever happens in California, it never stays in California. And whether true or not, that is precisely why we often take note of what is happening in the Golden State. And whatever it is they're doing coming out of left field, we want to keep an eye on, even if it's something that's unimaginable in other states. Well, there's a bill right now in California that's getting a lot of attention. In fact, critics are saying that it obliterates parental rights and that somehow it even creates legal loopholes, making child kidnapping easy. Is that just hyperbole or is it reality? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Gina Gleason. She's the director of Real Impact. Gina, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, so glad to be with you. Thank you for having me.
All right, we've got to get straight into this. So just give us the lowdown about this bill, AB 495.
Well, it's just as you described it, Jody. It's as simple as a person printing an affidavit off of a website, signing out the form, presenting it to school authorities or child care authorities and saying that now I am here to pick up this child and I have the authority to do so. This form does not require a parent's signature. This form has a checkbox that this fraudulent caregiver can check and say, I tried to contact the parent to tell them that I wanted to be the caregiver, but I couldn't reach them. It's that simple.
Whoa. All right, so what's the makeup of the California legislature, specifically as it relates to this bill? What is the perspective of this bill actually passing?
Well, they have a supermajority, the Democrats, and Republicans are in the minority. So usually the Democrats get pretty much everything that they want, unless we as the church, as conservatives, stand up and speak up. And that's what we're trying to do with this bill. If we make enough noise, if we get enough attention, they will back off. But it's a big uphill fight, and we don't always win, but we are determined because this bill is probably one of the worst bills that I have seen come across our state legislature.
All right, so what else does it do for parental rights in terms of chipping away at it or totally ignoring it altogether? I mean, parents there in California and parents who are not in California but are watching what's happening there, what are the highlights here that are that just make chills go up your spine?
Well, because they're constantly after our parental rights. Just a few years ago, Governor Newsom signed into law AB 665. That bill said that a minor 12 years old and older can be placed in a residential shelter without the parent's permission or knowledge. That was signed into law, and the governor did not even require that police were notified if the child just didn't turn up at home one day. So that's the path they're on in California, and I just don't understand it. Most people don't understand it. They want to take custody, care, rights away from parents and control our children.
Wow. So I know you've got a rally that's scheduled coming up in a couple of weeks at the Capitol there in California. Tell us more about that. What is this intended to accomplish? What are you hoping and praying for?
Well, because we need to get the attention of our state legislators. Our state senators need to know that we are standing in opposition to this dangerous bill. The only way to really get their attention is to actually show up. So we will be there on Tuesday, August 19th at 1 p.m. at the west steps of the Capitol, and we're calling people from all over California to join us.
So I know, from what I understand, there's going to be some training there, too, to help people get prepared for lobbying and even to lobby legislators and so forth. So for those who want to attend the rally, what can they expect?
Well, they're going to come and hear speakers like Pastor Jack, Heidi St. John, and others. And once we finish with our speakers portion, we're going to go on to what we call lobby training. And for any person that really wants to make sure that our state senators know they want a no vote on this bill, we will show them step by step how to walk into a legislator's office, what to say. We give them a packet of materials to hand over to the legislature, to the legislator, and make sure that they understand we and hundreds and thousands are showing up asking for a no vote.
Wow, that is outstanding. So those of you who are considering attending this, you're not just going to attend a rally. You're going to be trained and equipped to step in the gap, not only for your family, but for hundreds of others, and lobby the legislators and others to make a difference with this. So again, when is that going to take place, Gina?
It's Tuesday, August the 19th at 1 o'clock. And believe me, we do make a difference. There, several years ago, we came up against a bill that was going to legalize infanticide. We showed up, about 3,000 people, give or take. We made enough noise, got enough attention, that portion of the bill was pulled, and infanticide is not legal in California because I believe we stopped it.
Amen. And that's going to happen again. We are joining you in prayer and believing that's going to happen again with this bill. What is next, by the way, for this bill? Where is it right now in the process? Where's it lying? What's next?
Well, next step is the Senate Appropriations Committee, which will be heard on Monday the 18th. And after that, it goes to the state Senate floor, which means every senator is going to vote on this bill. But hopefully with our presence and the noise that we're making, we will get our senators to vote no.
Thank you so, so much, Gina Gleason, Director of Real Impact, for standing in the gap and so many of you, Pastor Jack, as you mentioned, and a host of others, stepping up to the plate for righteousness, for parental rights, and so forth. May the good hand of God be upon you and each of you as you engage this battle. And please know that we are praying for you, and we're calling upon our viewers and listening audience to do the same. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. Okay, before we conclude today's program, I do just want to say, friends, this is an urgent matter to pray for, what we just talked about. The stripping away of parental rights is something that must be defended and protected. So I want to encourage you to write that issue down, put it on a piece of paper somewhere that will remind you to pray for Gina and Pastor Jack and a host of others who are standing up trying to defend parental rights. And again, I want to thank you for joining us and supporting them in prayer. And now I want to turn our attention to some other very concerning news. Earlier today, the FBI released some new data on hate crimes, and they reported the highest ever increase reported single bias, anti-Jewish hate crimes, the highest ever last year. And although Jews make up about 2% of the U.S. population, the reported single bias anti-Jewish hate crimes comprise 16% of all reported hate crimes. Folks, this is just incredible in the statistics here. So how should we as Christians respond to all of this? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Bible teacher and best-selling author Joel Richardson. Joel, welcome back to Washington Watch. We deeply appreciate you coming on.
Jody, thanks for having me on.
All right, so what do you make of this rise in anti-Semitism here in the U.S. and around the world?
So obviously we're seeing like actual hate crimes. We're seeing violent attacks. We saw that young couple literally just murdered in cold blood in Washington a few months ago. But far beyond that, beyond the hate crimes, it's the national discourse. You know, we've seen people who were recently, darlings of the right. We're not talking about radical leftists. We're talking about people like Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, who they're going off the rails, embracing not just mild forms of criticism of Israel or this type of thing, but embracing full-blown, like some of the most lurid, base, ridiculous, like disproven, intellectually bankrupt forms of anti-Semitism. And these are the influencers. You know, Joe Rogan, the single most listened to podcaster in the world, hosting historians who are literally entertaining the idea that Hitler was the good guy of World War II and Churchill was the bad guy. And we have a whole generation right now of young people who are embracing this. So the reality is, even what we're looking at right now, the data, the FBI data from 2024, I don't see that going away. I believe it's going to get a lot worse.
So let's try to dive into this, Joel. What's behind it? What is driving this whole hatred? It's anti-Semitism. What is behind it all?
Look, it was Jesus himself who said, you know, all nations will hate you because of my name. And Christians debate that. It's from the Olivet Discourse in Matthew 24. They go, well, he was talking to Jews. He was talking to Christians. But the context of what he was talking about was a time of unparalleled tribulation, specifically in Israel, in Judea. And so this is the fulfillment of the words of Jesus. This is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. So what's behind it is Satan. It's very simple. The Lord has a plan of redemption. He has chosen to put his son on Mount Zion to rule the nations. And Satan wants the throne of David. And so he's going after God's people. That is what's behind it.
So what do you say to the person who, a professing believer or not, let me just say, what do you say to the person that says there's a difference between the Israel of the Bible and the Israel political state today? Why should we care? Why should we be concerned with what's happening in Israel today?
Well, first of all, it's a foolish statement. It's the same people. It's the descendants of the people in the first century. It's the same piece of land, same people, same piece of property. The Lord's covenant to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the children of Israel was everlasting. I will give you this piece of land. So the suggestion that it's not, I mean, of course, it's thousands of years later, but it is Israel. And look, just take the Bible and set it aside for a moment. Just last week, 5 minutes up the street from my house, I mean, 5 minutes walking distance, there was an individual out on the street corner with a Palestinian flag. I live in a very affluent Midwestern suburb of Kansas, and he was out there. I filmed him literally screaming that he's going to destroy every single blanking Jew, every one of, you know, reported to the FBI. What we are called right now as Christians to do is be good neighbors. And so we can talk about the theology and the ideas that are behind this hatred, the bad theology that leads to the mistreatment of the Jewish people. as it has throughout literally all of Christian history. But right now it's time to be good neighbors. And as you said, the hate crimes in the United States against Jews is disproportionate. The Lord calls us as his followers to stand with the poor, the downtrodden, the persecuted, the hated, the marginalized, the little ones. That is always the central issue on God's heart. And so right now it's time for Christians to stand up and be good neighbors and also provide intelligent theological responses to a lot of the nonsense that is just exploding out there.
Sounds like what you're describing is something that needs to be spearheaded in the churches across America and the church leaders of this country, who tend to shy away from oftentimes from items that are highlighted in the news to begin with. But this is a biblical issue, very clearly. What would you say to pastors right now by way of encouragement for them to step up and teach and train their congregants as to what a Christian response ought to be towards the Jewish community right now?
So pastors and teachers, first of all, they need to educate their people. There's, you know, when we as a community try to interact with the Jewish community, they're often very, very leery, very suspicious, with good reason. We have to acknowledge the long history of, quite frankly, the blood on our hands as Christians, whether we identify with the kind of Christians, the denomination of Christians that did these things. Jews don't know the difference. They just say, your people did this to my family and my people. So we begin with repentance. That's a very legitimate, I mean, necessary first step to a healthy relationship. And they need to, we need as pastors to educate our people. The majority of the pulpits today are not going deep. It's shallow, surfacey, self-therapeutic sermons, and the people are not equipped. And those that are, unfortunately, again, the church is divided. It split right down the middle. Those that are embracing replacement theology, supersessionism, these ideas, once you believe and teach that God is no longer done with this people, God's mad at this people, it's his will that they're dispersed among the nations, then it's very logical. It's very logical for you to say, well, if I'm a servant of God, then I should treat them harshly as well. And that was exactly the logic of Martin Luther, so many other Christian theologians. So we need to educate our people. The Jewish community is very well aware of how we've mistreated them, but most Christians are oblivious to it. And this sort of historical selective memory or amnesia is something that needs to be addressed.
In about 30 seconds or so that we have left before I need to wrap up, to those who are not pastors, but just Christians who are listening, watching you right now, how can they pray with their families, with their friends, to start moving the hearts of others in this arena?
Look, I think by bridge building, we can pray, you know, pray for our neighbors. But I think it's by bridge building, by getting in front of people face to face, eye to eye, and building relationships so that they're not just theoretical, that they're our neighbors, and build those relationships, because those are the things that survive when the storms come. Relationships just theoretically online, that's not going to do it. It's going to have to be much more real and substantial.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Bible teacher and best-selling author Joel Richardson. We appreciate you so much coming on the program. God bless you.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Jody.
All right, friends, that wraps it up. A lot to cover, and we try to do it all from a biblical perspective. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. We will see you tomorrow, same time. Have a great evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.